Thanks for joining us. You're listening to the Sprocket Podcast.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, and I actually haven't tried it yet. That's better than any Hef I've had.
It's
good. I'm not a huge Hef fan, actually, but it works out really well.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. All right.
I swear it has this smell, this almost fruity popsicle summer smell.
It's the popsicle of beers.
It tastes fairly fruity, too, actually.
Oh.
Uh-oh, we're going already, aren't we?
We're live. We're totally on. Yeah. Let's see. I just realized I'm going to need two hands to eat, so maybe I'll just do this.
Sure.
Be pointed
and
at
I'll
you guys.
I'll speak loudly.
There we go. And I'm going to remove my sweater because sweaters and soup.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently not make. I'm also prone to excessive sweat.
It's the God's sake, Rock.
Sorry about that. My apologies.
Okay.
Okay, so this is the Sprocket Podcast, episode 82A. No, 82B. We recorded A on Friday. So 82B. And I only do that because I have a bunch of other episodes already lined up that are already numbered. So here we are. I think we decided that episode A was the bonus episode. So this is the meat. This is the actual what's happening for... You guys are the main course.
Fancy.
So... I'm Brock Dittus. This is the Sprocket Podcast. That is Brandon Rhodes.
Hey.
He's pointing, but you can't see it.
That's right.
Yeah. I saw it.
Oh, well, that's true.
And we're here with Travis Whitwer. Is that the... Okay.
Yep, yeah, that's correct.
And Dave Foyt from Transport Land. What is it? Because...
Transport Land.
Which syllable gets the emphasis?
The first, I think.
Okay.
Transport Land!
Because it's not Transportland, right? Because you're not about riding across the city.
Oh, or riding addresses.
Right. Transport is the main word.
Transport is all in caps, and then land is in lowercase.
Usually.
With a port.
Typography matters with this.
Exactly.
It was a huge issue.
Yeah.
This whole, like, capitalizing a letter in the middle of the word is a new thing that helps.
Totally. So you guys have been making waves in the Portland cargo bike scene recently, and it's been since when, I guess?
A few months? I don't know. I don't remember exactly when we...
I think we started meeting in the winter.
Yeah, I guess we did.
So sometime like in either January or February, something like that?
Yeah, I think February was when we started. Actually, we're online.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because I was, I think before I heard about you guys from you guys, I heard about Transportland, or at least Travis, I heard your name from A Simple Six, Stacey Bisker. We recorded an interview, which will drop actually, I think, next weekend. But she had referenced that you guys were doing something cool, and I should keep my ears open. So, talk to her like in March. So,
thanks, Stacey.
Yeah. And she and her family are doing great things over in West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In what used to be, the most unhealthy city in America? It used to have that designation. I don't know if it still does, but they are...
How
they're
do you
going
get that designation?
With a lot of hard work and perseverance, I'm sure.
Or quite the contrary.
Yeah, a lot of McDonald's.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is fantastic soup.
Thank you.
Wow.
Yeah, this is...
It should be noted then for the record that
for posterity
we are drinking Hopworks beer. We're starting with their Hefeweizen, and we're eating soup, which is a curry, which you have prepared, Dave, and it's fantastic.
Thank you.
It's definitely a bonus for eating at Dave's place.
Seriously. And we'll be moving on to the 7-grain stout at some point later, so somebody will have to run to the fridge after we're done here. Which will be a chore.
It's a long job.
It's a whole 10 feet away.
So maybe we should just start with like the origins of Transport Land. As both of your mouths are full, I realize I timed the question poorly. Sorry.
It's been an interest of several of the people that I know to do something more with cargo bikes. In Portland, there are lots of cargo bikes, and it has almost become an everyday scene where you'll see one on the street compared to, like, you know, in 2006 where you might see one or two. It's definitely not the same as it is in Europe, but it's definitely not an odd thing anymore. And then December of last year, Joe Bike wanted to gather up some cargo bikes to do what he called a Santa haul, where we would all deliver packages to the families that have the gift, the food packages for the the holiday season. And he put a call out to people, and I put a call to people, and only one person organized to, you know, actually show up.
Okay.
And that was kind of sad.
Yeah.
It was like, I would love nothing more than to spend my whole Saturday driving stuff around on a bike. So we're like, okay, we got to organize and do something with this potential that we have. So we started talking about how we could organize cargo bikes and organize riders to give them the opportunity to do positive things with their bike and their time.
So basically a catalyzing force to put some kind of structure to the formless network of cargo bike riders here in town.
Uh-huh. And that's kind of what it was. We needed a web presence so that people could go someplace to find information and join in on that.
What are common things people are looking for or questions they're asking about all this?
A lot of people are looking for just help for nonprofit groups to haul, you know, cargo, material, equipment from place to place. A lot of people now are, because the website has been around for a little bit, are seeking it out for information on cargo bikes. Going there for information on businesses that use cargo bikes.
Would you say that outnumbers the more residential lifestyle inquirers, the business type things?
I don't understand.
Like, oh, hey.
Sorry, I should warn you. He will eat anything.
It's all good.
Unattended for about 5 seconds.
Will you drink the beer, Kat?
No, he won't touch the beer.
So are people more curious about residential uses, like how can I get my kids to school in this giant bucket on the front of my bike, or are they more curious about, like, I want to be a bike plumber?
What do you think? I have an opinion on that.
I would say probably as a whole there are more people interested in more domestic concerns just because there are fewer people interested in business in general.
Takes more imagination to figure out what businesses can I do.
And just, you know, not everyone's interested in starting their own business, but everyone's interested in going somewhere, so.
Right, right. So that's the human unifying factor. The cat is just sitting looking at the soup, watching from table to hand.
But that being said, there may also be, you know, more sort of, I don't know, awareness about business. I don't know. I don't really have a distinct feel for whether there's more one or the other, to be honest, but that's just kind of my first.
But it's a good blend of both. That's cool.
Yep.
I think that, you know, we're hoping that it becomes a place where people go for information. Like, if they're curious, how can I do this with my family or how can I do this with my business, they might head there first and learn from, you know, some of the people who have already done it. Like, Sohan Farms did a post for us where he shared his experience with a cargo bike and his farm business. And so he's got a business model that uses it. And other businesses could go there and say, hey, this is what he did. I can take what he did and modify it to fit my business needs. I think, interestingly, we started this, and then one of the first things that garnered interest and attention was involvement in the Grand Floral Parade and then the Starlight Parade.
Mm-hmm. You guys had a post about that just recently, I think, which I think we mentioned actually in part A of 82. So we were just talking about this the other day. But yeah, there was the Grand Floral Parade, which is the big Rose Festival. It's the biggest parade in town throughout the year, part of the big celebration, like the 2-week festivity period. And
bring us all your suburbanites. And
that's
your,
right, your Greshamites and your Tigard residents.
Yeah.
Will Vanloo is from Tigard.
Yeah.
He lives out there, which means he has a long trek with his bike anytime he brings it into town.
Yes,
which
he does.
Is impressive. Right. That's why he's not here, I think. Right. Is that he the crush of events over the past weekend and which we'll get to, I suppose.
And I guess one of the trains is down.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like a MAX train?
Yeah.
Oh, so, wow.
So his ability to, because he takes the MAX into town.
Okay.
with this bike. So
all right, we got to bookmark that for later too, because we want to talk about transit and cargo bikes and if they get along or not.
It would be a good one to talk about.
I got an opinion about that. So we got entrance into the Starlight Parade. So our Trans Portland group sort of got a lot of business interest early on. So it was pretty heavy on the business aspects of cargo biking for a good portion of the first 3 months of its existence.
Okay, that was kind of the first level of interest was raised kind of around moving stuff for business.
Right. And a lot of the businesses in Portland joined in and jumped in and gave us all sorts of encouragement and support, so they kind of, flavored the start of Transportland.
Yeah. And so the Starlight Parade entry was, it was a fellow who was carrying mattresses, I believe. He's a mattress salesman, or uh-huh. He has a mattress business?
They're just right down the street on Sandy.
Okay.
Mattress and, lot.
Okay. Did you have, Dave, did you have yours delivered from them?
Yes, but it came by van.
Oh, okay, sure. Well, I mean, and that's, we have to be honest about that. Like, you know, there many businesses that are also using cargo bikes are using motorized transport as well. There's a big infrastructure for that in our country, so that happens as well. But this was the guy that put together the Starlight, what would you call it, flotilla?
Yeah, it was. And it was a great combination of people from a lot of companies. And then Michael from Mattress Lot took it on, and he continued to organize with people and pulled all the businesses in. And so it became his little contribution to the cargo bike world here.
There we go. He threw some momentum towards that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and how many people eventually rode with this ride, or with that part of the parade?
I think there were 13.
13.
Mm-hmm.
And was it kind of an open call to anybody with a cargo bike, or were they selected?
It was an open call.
Okay.
So any business that wanted to throw down and join in could do so.
Nice. Who else was represented?
We had Voodoo Donuts.
That's right, and they have one now.
Yes, they do.
Is it pink?
It is pink.
It's pink, yeah. And the picture...
Yeah.
It's a pink box.
Oh, of course it is.
For anyone outside of Portland that hasn't heard yet, Voodoo Donuts is our pet donut shop here in town. And for a while now, they've had an iconic pink box presence in town. So the picture that I saw of that was of the proprietor, I think, riding this new cargo bike.
Proprietor of donuts, I like that one.
Yes, the donut proprietor. Wearing a fez and full, would it be a Shriner's outfit or mm-hmm. something like that? Yeah, which was a fantastic picture. So, anyways, they've got one. Who else was there?
There was Joshua from Plumber by Bike,
mm.
and there was Builder by Bike.
Yeah, we like Joshua. He was on about a year ago with us, and then Builder by Bike is someone who
I haven't heard of them.
Yeah, he's a guy who does a lot of construction here in town.
Correct. He's a bonded and licensed contractor and hauls everything around. And,
right.
You know, he carries a chop saw on his trailer on his bike, which is just awesome to see this trailer pulling down the road with a huge chop saw and a ladder on it.
Right.
And he did a lot of work for Joe Bike's shop.
And Joe Bike is kind of they're the cargo bike shop in town, right? There might be a few others that would do work on them. And I guess that...
Splendid, Clever.
That's right. And we actually bumped in... We didn't bump into it. We didn't talk to anybody. But there was a lady riding for Splendid Cycles, I think, on our way here. She had an attractive bullet.
It's a bicycle.
Which is a cargo bike, yes.
I don't know what that would be a euphemism for.
Should be said. So, yeah. A lot of people represented anyways, so... we haven't defined yet, but what are your cargo bikes of choice?
Mine is actually a fairly normal-ish bicycle that I just happen to be able to put lots of stuff on.
Right. And it's an old Raleigh frame, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
With a huge rack in the front.
And a huge rack on the back and big bags.
Yeah.
And,
Which is neat because it pushes the idea of, you know, a bike that carries cargo and, you know, for a lot of people, a huge... cargo bike may not be what they need,
mm-hmm.
but being able to carry some cargo is good.
I mean, I've done like a half a week's groceries and a case of beer and like, you know, all my work stuff all at once. You know, so.
Right. If this is a case, like 12 bottles, 24?
Yeah, 12. Yeah. Like the sessions or something.
It could handle it.
Hello.
How's it going?
Pretty good.
And I don't think we've actually met yet. I'm Brock.
I'm Trina.
Good to meet you.
Brandon.
Hey. Oh, see, Tegan's like, yes, guys.
And is Tegan is the name?
Yeah.
Yes, he's very
good.
Hey,
what is
it looks
like?
There's
food around.
Because
there's
soup. Oh. I have the problem of meeting people who I know more about than they know about me, which is the problem I bumped into meeting a listener yesterday at the disaster relief trials, where, you know, like we've been talking, you and I, Brandon, for a year and a half now and recording it, and people have listened to it all, and so they know us and they know everything about us, and we don't know them. So it's that weird celebrity thing.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways.
Celebrity is a strong word. But.
It is. But anyways, yeah, I've never met your wife, Dave, but I feel like
you know everything
her.
About her.
Yeah.
No.
There we go.
She was the primary architect of the soup.
Of which?
The soup.
Oh.
Well
okay.
Done.
This is good soup.
Oh, thanks. I've never actually made it before, and so it's like, what the hell, this doesn't suck.
It does not suck. It's very good. So you've got the Raleigh.
Mm-hmm.
And Travis, yours is?
I have two cargo bikes at the moment. I have a Yuba, so it's a long tail, and
okay.
I have a Bullet, which is a Long John.
There we go. Is that Long John is the nomenclature for the front loader?
It's often what people call it.
I like that.
Now and for the DRT thing, it was decided to call it a front loader because it would be, we thought that some people might not know what the Long John meant.
Sure.
So,
thought they were wearing woolens or something.
Who knows?
Yeah.
But I've also had a work cycle Bach Fietz and a Madsen.
Okay.
As well. So I just tend to go through cargo bikes and buy them and use them and then move on to another one.
There we go. It's kind of like almost like sports cars, but.
Yeah, almost.
But sexier.
Right, exactly. Perhaps a bit cheaper.
Yeah.
And then I think we mentioned Will Vanloo has a Tom's car. Maybe didn't mention that. Tom's cargo bikes.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of a. Frankenstein bike seems ungenerous.
It really is.
But it's a bike that's made out of other old bikes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of a front loader, but the back end is a cruiser.
Okay. Yeah, and I actually have one of Tom's bikes. I have one of his two tall bikes that he's created.
Yeah.
Is it the triangle one?
Yeah. Actually, the Lamplighter is the design that he used. It was the bike that, back in gas lamp days in the 1890s, people would cruise around, city employees would climb
right.
up onto one of these and ride out of the shop and light the gas lamps with a torch.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're like 10 feet tall, you know,
mm-hmm.
you have to get up there.
Exactly. And then at the end of their shift, you know, they'd get back to the garage and climb back down, and that was it. So I think he was resistant to building a tall bike because... it wasn't really a cargo bike. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't up his alley. This is Tom Labonte, tomscargobikes.com. And anyways, he bumped into this design. He had seen a photograph of an old Lamplighter design. And so he said, hey, I'll put a couple cargo platforms on there, and then it'll be a cargo bike. So, yeah. Anyways.
That's neat because he was sending me pictures of that bike as he was making it.
Yeah.
And little sketches. And I was like, oh, I, this is awesome. I need one of these things. It's a bike I don't have. So, see, here we are. I know a little bit about you, but I didn't know it was you.
True enough.
That's a circle right there.
I should have brought that over tonight. You could have tried it out.
It looked awesome.
It's a lot of fun. It's a good bike.
And the seat is centered
yeah.
better, so you don't have that you know, falling backwards
mm-hmm.
situation with a tall bike.
Yeah, most tall
That's
bikes
the situation?
Are just, it is. Most are just one frame on top of another, which gives you a lot of leverage when you're pedaling. Especially, I think, uphill on an incline, you have a tendency to lean back or pull back on the handlebars
then,
as you're balancing yourself. And the whole thing goes, yeah, big wheelie. So
it makes for really cool dismounts, though.
I bet it does.
When you ride,
whop.
Exactly.
You just let go.
Yeah.
Drop
yeah.
off.
And with I haven't measured the wheelbase on mine, but I feel
it's
like it's
long.
It's very long. It's probably longer than I am tall. If I laid down next to it, there would still be tire on either side of my
And you're huge.
I'm huge,
yeah.
So... anyways, no problems with wheels on that. But and then the last guy, whose name I'm forgetting right now.
Ethan Jewett.
Yes, and
yeah.
I met him yesterday. He was announcing most of the, and we should probably get to talking about the event because we referenced it several times. Nobody that doesn't already know about it would know what we're talking about. But Ethan was announcing the disaster relief trials. And what does he ride?
He rides an orange Bullet.
Okay. Yeah.
He's also had a work cycles Bach Fietz.
Okay.
And he has a trike.
You were going to ask about trikes.
Yes.
Maybe we should do that now before we talk about disaster relief.
I guess so. Now, cargo bikes, are trikes okay as well?
Well, we have a very loose definition of cargo bikes because we don't want to necessarily become,
snobbish.
Sure, elitist and snobbish. Because, you know, if you're carrying cargo on a trailer, that's a viable cargo bike hauling thing.
Open and affirming of all non-motorized payloads.
Right.
There we go.
And that's why we sometimes use the term cargo carrying bike. Because if you say cargo bike, people imagine a long john. It's probably the first image that people get is a long john.
Right.
But the issue here is that a trike is actually not a bike.
Yeah, it's
because
the BI, it's the operative
right.
crisis.
And so we'll consider it a cargo trike.
And that's why the name Transportland actually has, it doesn't reference bikes at all, really. So
right.
Yeah.
So you can be a big tent for that.
Thank you for indulging my semantic question. I'm curious. And I haven't seen like a cargo trike, really. I've seen luxury trikes, I guess.
Well, Dan did an amazing job yesterday with his cargo trike.
He actually did do really well.
And it's Dan Kaufman, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who is Crank My Chain TV is something that... Is that still going, or is that a project from a couple years ago?
No, it's still going.
Okay.
And he was doing really well in his disco track.
That's right. The disco track, that's the one that was famously appropriated by the Portland Police Department during the Occupy protests, I believe. There, was it one of the swarms?
Yeah, the bridge, I believe it was.
Okay.
And it was taken, and, you know, it was requested for its release, and finally got it.
Yeah, it was a big deal, though, and it was not entirely sure if he was going to get it back, right? Or so many layers of bureaucracy, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, yeah. So, the disaster relief trials was this big event that you guys have been prepping for a long time. I'm
what
sure.
What the hell was it?
What was this?
Well, there was an issue of we want to do something that would be interesting with cargo bikes. And this happened about the same time that Transportland was being... you know, created. And so one night we had a meeting with Mike Cobb and Ethan Jewett and I, and we were just sharing ideas, and Mike had this real intense desire to put on a disaster relief event using cargo bikes and bikes with trailers and such. And then he pitched the idea, and then Ethan, his ears perked up and his eyes got all big, and he's like just excited because he's a big disaster and preparedness guy, net and search and rescue and all that. He's like, oh, this is so my thing. And so
right.
between the two of them, they bounced ideas back and forth and back and forth. And then we all just sort of made up this event for Pedalpalooza, which started off being a really small idea of we'll ride around and we'll haul, you know, cinder blocks and maybe a keg or a bay of hail. And then it turned into this, you know, big media thing.
I actually remember us having some discussion about an event that could, you know, be something like this after the Oregon Manifest last year. just thinking about, like, more of an actual sort of realistic test of what... a bike that's meant to carry stuff could actually do.
Right, because Oregon Manifest is the event where people take... Is it hand-built bikes, or is it bikes of all kinds?
Hand-built.
They're all hand-built, yeah.
Okay, it's a demonstration of their ability to carry a payload from one place to another. And they do some unpaved roads and some hills through the West Hills, I think.
Yeah.
At least a couple of years ago when I was watching them arrive. I think they had just come from some West Hills routes. But they're payload was more like a six-pack or something like that. They had to carry a six-pack of beer, which is a fine payload. We approve of that. But it's not as functional, perhaps, as a different sort of bike might be in a disaster situation. So this was kind of like ramping that up to taking the next step.
Right. And they had the byline of the ultimate utility bike that they were pushing, and there was a lot of discomfort with, you know, some of the bikes that were being touted as the ultimate utility bike.
Yeah,
I remember being disappointed.
More with the bikes that they actually chose, because there were some pretty interesting bikes in the contest, but the ones that they chose, the second place one I remember being pretty good. It was kind of a short, long tail. But the other two, I mean, one of them was basically a road bike.
And with, like, a tube for an umbrella or something?
Yeah, and the other one was, I don't know, just basically like an old Schwinn with a big front rack that had a stereo in it on the front.
Also acceptable cargo, but not necessarily for disaster relief.
Which, I'm, they were all really, they were all nice bikes, but in terms of utility, it was pretty minimal over just, like, you know, what you could get at Walmart, really.
Right, it was a great idea, and, you know, it was a good idea to throw out the idea of what would a utility bike and what would the ultimate utility bike look like. But after going through the event, and I, you know, I have to say I probably am a cargo bike snob, so check that with
for what it's worth. There's the new blog, Cargo Bike Snob.
Yeah.
Cargo Bike Snob PDX.
I don't think any of us are that witty.
I didn't feel that we had a,
it's a high
really
bar.
Pushed yeah. our opportunities with the event. Like, we still had a lot of ways to go with what we can do with cargo bikes. Seemed pretty benign.
Right.
I mean, my feeling after the Oregon Manifest was, I mean, even my 30-year-old Raleigh that's, like, been sitting in someone's garage for 30 years, really I could carry more stuff on it than the two of the top three bikes in the, you know, thing, you know. So, they seem to miss the mark of the event a bit.
Sure.
Even though the bikes were gorgeous bikes, mm-hmm. it's just, yeah.
To be fair, a event centering around the question of ultimate utility in a moment of crisis, it's a bit different tone than the rest of Pedalpalooza, like World Naked Bike Ride.
It's true.
Right.
And Star Trek versus Star Wars.
Yeah.
Which did have an awesome AT-AT costume. Did you see that?
AT-AT.
Yes.
I'm...
It was the walker.
Okay, my nerd foo is weak tonight.
All-terrain armored transport.
Articulated legs, like, hooked to their legs. So
right.
It was righteous. On a two-person thing.
I think last year, just on the Trek Star Wars
Ooh.
Ride, there was the Star Destroyer, was it?
Ooh.
Or what's the bigger one? Is there a
the
bigger
big
one?
The big triangle thing.
Yeah, the big
yeah.
triangle thing. There was, I think, a four-man construction of that.
Wow.
On the note of multi-person bicycles, is there an example of a multi-person cargo bicycle?
Sure, any of them could be.
Well, okay. Have you seen, like, a business or anybody? Like, I mean, most businesses that have, like, one that actually incorporate this have, like, an electric assist or something, but I'm sure there's got to be situations where it'd just be really handy to have a two-person power bike.
Mattress Lot uses a tandem in a big trailer to haul their mattresses.
Yeah, that's right.
Really? That's awesome.
Yeah. I was thinking Portlandia. I've been disappointed by the TV show Portlandia in many ways, but particularly in the Move by Bike sketch that they did, in which I know it's just supposed to be funny and all, you know, you don't take comedy seriously, but it was like the worst portrayal of a Move by Bike that you could possibly have for comedic purposes, so I understand why, but it's so much better in real life.
It really is.
But that involved a tandem, I think, with Fred and Carrie on it.
Oh.
And the punchline, I'll ruin it for everybody now, it was that they delivered it to the wrong house. So
that,
no.
was it? That was the zinger?
There you go. Yeah, so, but yeah, actually, and then Lance Poehler from the Edible Cycles Project, I think, he was at the Zombie Ride yesterday, and he has a bike that was created by, is it Adam George?
Adam George.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The bike. That bike is crazy cool.
Right, which was a tandem with a removable back seat.
Like, you
which,
can fit four people on it or something?
Well, they fit four people on it to bash some zombie skull
okay.
In one of the events. but yeah, the idea was that you could either carry a second passenger with complete with a second set of cranks and, the drivetrain and everything. Or you could remove the seat and turn it into a long tail. At which point you could carry basically, you know, like a Yuba or something like that.
Interesting. So you basically just remove the seat and put a platform over it
mm-hmm.
or something.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, that was also impressive. So
I want to go back to the event.
Please do.
Yes. So from what I understand, it's got to do with everything goes shit crazy. We have a big earthquake. Bikes are the best solution.
It's day four. You know, the chaos,
sell it to me. Come on.
The chaos has already occurred. You know, people were already scared, and now they're trying to recover. And systems of transportation are down. Fuel may be scarce. Roads may be blocked.
cars...
Bridges are down, things like that.
Right. Cars may not be the best option from getting from place to place, but there are points in every neighborhood where supplies could be brought to, and then from that point in the neighborhood, distribution could occur to the neighbors. And then you have to get the food from either the Red Cross or the Oregon Food Bank or the Oregon National Guard somewhere to the neighborhood station. And then a good option for doing that would be these cargo bikes. And so within 3 hours, the 30 riders carried, you know, 3,000 pounds of stuff.
Which is awesome.
30 miles.
Right.
Incredible.
So it shows that it could be done. You could just spend a short period of time and carry a lot of cargo.
And part of it that was interesting is that the stuff they were carrying wasn't just like, you know, bricks that you could neatly stack. It was like a 5-gallon jug of water that's sloshing around as they're riding, and, you know, other stuff that's kind of awkward to you know, either even attach to a bike or just, you know, that moves around, or it's not, you know, like just a stationary thing. So,
and David was on Checkpoint Rouge, which was the last checkpoint,
And maybe we should explain that there were how many checkpoints in the event?
There were seven.
And there was no prescribed route, is that correct?
You had to hit them in order, but there you could get to them any way you wanted.
Okay. So this was the last checkpoint you were at. Mm-hmm. And what was the task to be accomplished there?
There they just had to pick up a box, supposedly, of like first aid supplies.
Okay.
And the boxes were all different sizes, but all the same weight.
I see.
But it was interesting because at that point they have their full load of stuff, so we got to see all of them with a, you know, a full load and how they had strapped them all to their bikes, or like with a lot of the front loaders, long johns, you know, it was just a matter of like park, throw it in, head off again.
Adjust the cargo tie downs and you're set.
Yeah, and some of them, I'm trying to remember now, I think it was... Ryan Oshagan that I'm thinking of, like the box on his bike was big enough that he basically just have everything sitting in there. He didn't even have it tied down.
It was basically the Tetris game of a U-Haul.
You just had
everything
to
in.
Actually just get it in there and then it just sat there.
Just thinking of cargo and the difficulty of loading, who maybe had the hardest time fitting everything onto their rig?
Sadly, I was at the headquarters the whole day. I didn't get to actually see the event, so I have to wait for photos and movies.
Right.
I'm trying to remember if... I don't remember his name, but one guy who had a Yuba, that he had the kickstand break on him, so he couldn't stand his bike up, so he had to kind of like lay it down on its side and then strap it on and then haul the whole thing back upright again.
This is a Yuba Longtail, and it's got the is it the double kickstand, so it kind of pops out. And...
the whole thing just came off. So he had it like strapped in with the cargo.
Wow, was it an actual equipment failure, or did the bolt come loose?
I'm not exactly sure. Nope,
nobody knows.
It was like that when he pulled up, so I don't
that's
know.
No fun.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know. In general, it seemed like the folks with long tails were having a little harder time just getting stuff on in a way that they would stay.
Right.
But I don't remember anyone having, like, a really major problem.
Okay. But the long tail does have the issue of no platform. I mean, there's a small platform, but there needs to be more securement, I guess.
There was... opportunities at various places along the route between checkpoints or at the actual checkpoints for different bike formats to show their strengths and weaknesses. And I was actually thinking that long tails would do quite well because, especially the Yubas, because they've got that bottom bracket, and I was imagining just having the 5-gallon bucket put on it and then you just cinch down an already put on ratchet tie down, and you're golden. There's no futzing around. But
right. And that's like a runner, like a running rail or something like that.
Exactly.
Like, yeah. If you were a kid sitting there on the back of it, you could put your feet there, I suppose.
Exactly. So it'll be interesting to look at the numbers and maybe categorize the bike types and see where the strengths and weaknesses were, you know, in the end.
Yeah.
Because whereas a long john front loader might be convenient for loading the cargo in, it's maybe not as convenient for like lifting over a wall, you know.
Right. And that was another one of the events, right? There was some vertical obstacle that had to be cleared?
Yeah, at checkpoint 2, there was a 1-meter
barricade upon which, you know, riders came and then had to lift their bike and the cargo either connected or separate over the barricade.
And 1 meter, that's give or take 3 feet.
Yeah, a little more than
3 feet.
39 inches, I think.
Right. That seems like, did people have to offload their cargo for this?
I'm assuming most people. I wasn't there either, so I'm not sure. Exactly.
Right, I guess, yeah.
Based on the pictures, most people did, but there were a couple that looked like people just hauled their bike on top and then just pushed it over.
If the average is 100 pounds each, that's...
At that point, they didn't maybe have quite that much.
They had 65 pounds by then.
So not too far off.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, you add the weight of those bikes.
Right.
That's pretty intense.
And then after the 1 meter, you know, haul over, they had a little rock pile that they had to get over, and they could either do that with a partner or by themselves. Then a pond, then a berm, and then some potholes. So it kept them busy for a while.
There we go. And the pond, this is up by the bike path in 205, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. So this is, famously in Portland, there's a never-ending...
Famously.
Famously to some, I suppose. There's a perpetual puddle that does not go away, except perhaps maybe like in late August.
It's an autonomous of all of Portland, really. But,
yeah. Right, right. It's like it's a microcosm of the city itself.
There are several in this neighborhood, actually.
The great thing is that the pond grew from when we first scouted the area in March to just last week.
Is odd, because March, it's usually a lake.
Yeah, it's doubled, tripled in size. It was probably just above the mid crank of most bikes pedaling through.
Right.
At least it wasn't my bike.
That does present some options. I mean, you're not going to ruin your bike if you roll through a puddle, but it was a big puddle, and there are bottom brackets and things that don't like water, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I suppose...
Well, then it kills the inertia you get pedaling through.
Right.
Soup.
Yeah.
Especially if your feet are going into it as you're pedaling.
Oh, yeah.
And most people, it was a sunny day yesterday. Most people were not, were probably not wearing rain gear or boots or anything like that.
Was there at any point, either in the puddle or outside, some tip overs?
Ooh.
I didn't hear about any.
I didn't hear of any as well.
Someone flatted before the first checkpoint.
Oh, no.
But she got her rig back and going within like 15 minutes and was back on the course.
Yeah.
It's not bad. Yeah. Do we have any idea what kind of a tire that was?
Although,
it was a Marathon Plus, was it?
She was riding on Metro Feet, so it was Diana Remke, and what punctured her tire was a drill bit. Full-size drill bit.
Are you kidding?
That's fair.
She kept it with her.
That's fair, yeah.
You make a necklace out of that or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Did she have to replace the whole tube, I assume? Because that would put a pretty nasty hole in it.
I don't know.
Either that or an industrial-sized patch kit.
Yeah.
That's pretty rough.
On both sides of the tube.
Yeah.
What's ironic, I guess, is that according to another rider, she was asking them if he had a flat kit she could borrow just in case because she didn't bring hers.
Oh, okay.
No. Before the ride.
Yeah.
I'm always curious. I'm a bit superstitious, kind of like a sailor, you know, where like... I don't talk about bike trouble around my bike. I never talk about replacing my wheel unless I'm, you know, far.
Really?
Far hence. Yeah, yeah. I don't talk about spokes breaking. I don't talk about flat tires. I just don't mention it.
Hear it, the metal, hear it.
And I firmly believe that does nothing to change what will actually happen to me in my experience, but...
Makes you feel better.
For whatever reason, yeah. I don't want the bike to hear.
I don't know, because, you know, for years, I never had to change a flat. You know, from my teenage years to young adult, I had no flats to change, and I was bragging about it one day. Like, I've never changed an actual flat. I mean, I've changed my son's flat and all stuff. And then going to work one day, I got three flats. I punctured the front tire, fixed it. Actually, I got front tire and back tire punctured. And then I fixed the front tire, and Jerry rigged the back tire, and then the front tire popped again. I hit a pothole on the way over the I-5 bridge.
Oh, my.
Oh, and the patch
gave
out.
Yep.
That's no fun.
Well, you're compensating for those other years.
That's how I thought.
Come to think of it, growing up, I rode my bike all the time. I don't think I ever got a flat.
Right.
I wore a lot of tires by skidding.
Yeah.
True, and there's that.
I lost a gallon of organic apple juice in college when I was carrying them on the handlebars And I would power brake. And I didn't know that my brakes weren't aligned because I was a dumb 19-year-old. Well,
it
I went that $6.
Sorry, that's a sad story.
I'm sorry, I'm just totally bringing a bummer.
No, I'm just, I feel bad for you. It's that's a lot of apple juice.
Fucking A.
Oh, did you find, Travis, what the offending particles were? Was it glass or...
I just wasn't really paying attention to the road in front of me. I was in a zone, and there was a large pothole that was...
Oh, the pothole was the first one.
Yeah, it was so deep that it just popped, and the huge cuts, and my patch job was not big enough to cover up what was there.
Yeah.
So I had to get my bike and myself over the I-5 bridge so that someone could pick me up.
And is this the I-5, from Vancouver to here, to Portland? Or
I was going from Portland to...
From Portland to Vancouver.
To Vancouver.
Okay, gotcha.
And it was during rush hour, so there was... And I had to get on the other side to teach a class, so there was no way that someone could come and get me and take me to class. So I had to just shuffle myself over the bridge and just make it to the side and call somebody.
Right, right. And the I-5 bridge, for anybody who hasn't done it, it's a boondoggle preparing to be another boondoggle, preparing to be, I don't know, preparing to stop, I guess. Yes. Yeah. But, I don't know, there's not really a bike lane to speak of going across. There's a sidewalk.
For $4.2 billion, they may or wouldn't they be.
That's true, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the sidewalk on, or the path on the...
It's like 3 feet wide.
Yeah. The one on the east side is much smaller than the west side. My handlebars just barely fit through on some spots.
Yeah, I'd never thought about that, because I used to live in Vancouver and come down to Portland to be cool. Mm-hmm. And so I guess... What was that?
How'd that go for you?
I got cooler, I guess. I mean, okay. I'm here now. I live here, so I suppose it worked. But no, I don't think I ever remembered recognizing that, just the clearance on one side or the other. That's fascinating. It's very thin on the east side. A lot of things sticking out. And, like, there are places... I guess there's, like, one place in particular where there's a gate that they can close.
Uh-huh.
I've never seen it close, but the gate's there. And...
Just to make you uncomfortable?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that... It works. It does. So, anyways. Yeah. Tricky stuff. I'm sure I had another question in mind. It probably jumped ship. I'm sorry.
The gate is shut.
Every now and again, you... That... Yes.
That's a good cue for me to get the second growler.
Well, hey, yeah.
We
need something to loosen our tongues.
If there's anything left in the first one, you could just bring them both.
Hey.
That's true enough, yeah. You guys are both from the area?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I grew up in the suburbs of Portland.
That's right. We've talked to you before, I guess. But yeah, you grew up kind of in the Portland metro area. And Travis, are you native to Oregon or...
Yep, grew up
elsewhere.
In Tacoma.
Tacoma, really?
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in Tacoma-ish. Puyallup.
Ah, Puyallup.
Yeah.
My uncle lives in Puyallup.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the fair, whatever year.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's what I love about Puyallup.
The fair?
The Puyallup fair.
Is there much else to love about Puyallup?
Yeah, the really cool
the different
signs
ways
on the
it.
Puyallup River, on the bank, the paintings.
That's true.
The
yeah.
Mickey Mouse sign we drive by, and every time
totally.
We drive by, like, I want to see the Mickey Mouse sign.
And this is minutia for anybody who doesn't know much about Tacoma, but yeah, the Puyallup River goes through a... there are, what would you call them? Like a sluiceway. There's...
Whoa.
A sluiceway?
They're
cutting you off, Brooke.
Yeah. There are places where people can do art, and I assume these were done, like, legally and with permission, because they're pretty ornate, and it looks like they were done with purpose and not in a hurry. But yeah, anyways, beautiful art installed on these concrete slabs between Puyallup and Tacoma. So, yeah.
They're not there anymore, though. They've worn away.
Right, right. Yeah, a couple flood stages would do that, I suppose. So, yeah, when did you arrive in Portland?
2000.
Okay. Me too.
Wow.
Travis and I are lining up on all sorts of the stars are aligning.
I lived in Vancouver as well prior
okay.
from 1996 to 1999 and then bought a house.
There we go. Nice. So you've seen the town change quite a bit, and you as well, Dave. What are some of the highlights, would you say, over the past 10 years or so? Like, what What's changed about Portland to make it a better bicycling city?
I would say to a large extent, just more people riding bikes.
it's kind of the inertia, like the more you push, the faster it goes, or...
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think really in terms of, like, infrastructure and legality and all of that, it doesn't seem like all that much has changed. I mean, there have been certain things, and some of it's negative and some of it's positive, but I think for the large part, I just feel more comfortable because there are more people around, you know?
Yeah, yeah, there's a certain amount of safety that comes in numbers. You feel like... Like, if there are all these other people out here, I can't be the only crazy one.
Yeah.
Or maybe just, I'm not crazy at all.
You know, when you're not the only person riding down the middle of the lane, you know, people tend to be a little nicer if they're, you know.
If they're used to that happening, they know what to do.
Yeah.
My parents are terrified. They live in Salem, but affirming them after they've passed the bicycle safely and responsibly.
Yeah.
They feel so much better knowing what proper etiquette is.
Right.
Them they
like,
the
it's not a big deal. They aren't offended by bicycles. They're just scared.
Yeah.
I have a friend from Chicago that came out with a buddy, and he had his buddy film him crossing on a bike a busy street. And he's like, okay, watch this, Brandon. He's like, watch. You film it, and the cars will actually stop as I'm crossing the street. And so Steve Vance does a grid Chicago. He rode across the street, and the cars stopped, and was getting filmed, and it's like, this would never happen in Chicago. Cars would not stop for you.
It just seems preposterous, like it shouldn't happen, but it does.
Yeah. To take it even a step further, there was an organization started recently, the Netherlands, the Dutch Cycling Embassy.
Oh, right, the Cycling Embassy, which Netherlands are actually sending ambassadors to various places to say, here's how you can do bikes better.
That's kind of a coalition.
Like the Dutch East India Company, but for good.
It's kind of a coalition of, like, business and government and, you know, all kinds of different sort of people from different sectors giving advice on their types of, you know, issues, but... They filmed sort of like a introductory video, and they posted some video of the you know, behind the scenes stuff. And there's this one scene in the thing where it centers on a girl riding around on a bike, but she pulls out in front of this guy who's turning, and the guy stops for him. But in the filming of it, they intentionally had her pull out right in front of turning cars over and over and over and over again, and every single one of them stops.
So were they hoping to get a bad example of the way they really didn't like her. How this could go down?
I don't know exactly. I mean, I don't know if they were just trying to get the shot just right or whatever,
okay.
But in any case, it showed that that's typical behavior, you know, that...
that it worked out well. Motorists are kind of aware of things. And, yeah. That's nice. I was thinking about just being on the road, and cargo bikes are probably more often in a unique position of needing more space on the road than most bicycles are. Have you guys had any experiences with either taking the lane or not having the lane and needing it?
I found people to be quite friendly, because when I had, like, my box feats, I would be carrying my kids in it, and so... No matter where I was, people were more than happy to stop.
Sure.
Because they saw the kids, and they saw my bike, and they're like, oh, I'm going to stop so that everyone else has to stop so that this guy with his kids can go across the road.
There we
so
go.
They were extra friendly because of it.
Right. And I guess they assume maybe if you have kids, it's less likely that you're going to be an asshole.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah. Though I have seen some people doing pretty interesting things in cars with kids in the back seat.
True enough. That's a whole different game, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, it humanizes it, seeing kids on the bike as well. You're not one of those damn hipsters or whatever the zeitgeist that they're so afraid of is. It's like, this is a family.
Right.
Yeah.
It's got to be cute to see, like, three kids stuffing a box on the
phone. Oh, gosh. Oh, geez, yeah.
I
can't hit that.
We have a cargo trailer that was built by the guy who makes made the bike RV. Brian is his name. And
Dreadlocks.
Yeah, have you guys seen it was the parked in front of City Bikes for a long time.
Yeah,
over on 20th
over here.
And Ankeny.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But he's a genius and really
he's
good.
He's a mad genius.
He's a mad genius. Really good at making stuff. We have a trailer that he built for a friend of ours who did a work trade for that trailer, and
for repairing his jeans.
For yes, is that all it was?
Yes.
So
she repaired several pairs of his jeans.
So our friend fixes his pants and he says, "I will make you a cargo trailer."
So mad genius, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or irrationally benevolent.
Okay, right.
Take note. I know how to sew, and I love a trailer.
Yeah.
There you go. So the trailer is, it's a flatbed. Oh, it is like 8 feet or 6 feet.
It's 8x4,
eight by five,
maybe. It's,
okay.
It's about the size of a
sheet of plywood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The back of a truck.
And it's all
it's
aluminum, I believe.
Yep.
Yeah. So, anyways, yeah, we've had that thing tied to a bike that really, when the trailer is fully loaded, can't support
its
weight.
It's a Kona, it can't hold it.
Right. It's a fine bike, and it's the one that you rode through college, Brennan. But yeah, not necessarily up to the task of carrying, propelling, and then bringing
stopping
to a halt 500 pounds or more of cargo.
Yeah.
But that didn't stop me from trying to use it to move stuff when my wife and I were relocating from one place to another. So we did this a couple different times, and I had a really scary experience crossing Holgate at 42nd. And Holgate here in Portland, there is it's like a disjuncted sort of block where you have to curve, like
on a hill.
Yeah,
you have to jog a block.
Right, right. But it's not like a full block. It's just enough to think that you can do it, especially when you're young and cocky, like I was. So. I remember
Portland, actually.
Right. Loading the trailer up and having it fully, you know, with end tables and bookshelves and boxes full of shit and, you know, basically everything we were trying to move from one place to another in as few trips as possible. And realizing once I had the forward momentum that I could not stop and doing the left turn in front of an oncoming vehicle sort of thing, not because necessarily I felt like I just wanted to stick it to the man, but because
you had no other option at the moment.
Gravity forced me to do so.
Yeah.
So,
That intersection scares the hell out of me for that kind of situation.
Right.
I was my commute for years, and I don't want that ever.
Well, the nice thing is the hutch is there, so if you do have a bad accident,
you just go right into the pizza joint.
Get a beer afterwards.
Your shit's all over the parking lot. But.
Yeah. So that was a situation of doing something foolhardy with equipment not quite up to the task, but... do you guys have any stories or experiences or heard of other people with bad stories, like the ways that cargo bikes have gone wrong? This isn't really a good way to sell like what you guys are about, I guess. But, but we're curious.
We'll answer a cricket noise here.
Interested in the salacious details.
I don't know. I don't think I have any bad stories.
Nobody pushes their bikes too far?
I'm sure people load them down more than they're ready for. And I know that the manufacturers have to rate them for probably just under what is... probably reasonable, just so that they say stay safe, but
yeah.
I've seen some pretty loaded down bikes.
I mean, you know, like the fork mounted front rack that I have on my Raleigh, for instance, is rated for like 25 kilograms or something, but like people in the Netherlands carry other people on them all the time. I mean, so the other issue with that obviously is handling, so you wouldn't necessarily want to ride down Sandy with someone on your handlebars, but
right.
Makes for a great date going down Sandy.
Yeah. I would say I've loaded down my bike to the point where I wouldn't want to put anything more on it.
I've had my frame rip apart, but that was because I was a dumbass.
When did this happen?
Oh, 2006. I tried going to Winco and loading up with... canned goods.
Ah.
And I had those collapsible
baskets
on, a $30 back rack on a Kona Do.
There we
and
go.
I went down the ramp, transitioning down towards Glisten and all that. Good, good, good. I could feel the whole back of it wobbling like this. And then it ripped. I was a dumbass.
Well, I mean, it happened. We all have been at one point or another. Some of us still are. I would consider myself close to that. So,
no, I'm sorry, I didn't have a good zinger for that story.
That's okay.
And it went wobble, wobble. Wobble, wobble.
I think maybe the only bad thing is that it makes picking up things from free piles all the more accessible. Sure. I mean, I'm driving, you know.
You put the whole free pile in.
That's right. You know, I was cruising down once, and there was a bush on the side of the road. I was like, oh, I'll take the whole bush. Because I just throw it out
of my front. That's a fine blueberry bush.
That's right, exactly. Yeah. Bookshelves, you know.
Yeah.
I love it.
Stray dogs.
Right. I was curious about, we hinted at the idea of transit earlier, and we should maybe...
Oh, yes.
What is it that Will Van Loo does? Because he uses TriMet with his cargo bike.
I'm not sure what he does for work, actually.
Not necessarily his cargo bike.
Oh, not with his car. Okay, I think I misunderstood that.
No, but there are issues with transit and cargo bikes. There's,
nonetheless.
Right.
Well, I would say with bikes in general, really.
Yeah. What are some of the issues?
There's nowhere to put them. I mean, there is.
Can they turn?
But even my bike, it's just a standard city bike, and I have to turn it upside down and hang it by the rear wheel, or it's too long to hang on the hooks, because you have to turn the bars sideways.
Ah.
Plus, I have stuff in the panniers, I have to unload it first, and then it's just completely impossible if I have to hang it up, really.
Right. Yeah.
Which is too bad, because if you're trying to link from place to place and utilize a bike to get from place to far away place, hopping on a Max or even an Amtrak would be a great way to do that. But if it's not part of the business model or part of the system, it doesn't work.
Right.
Right, yeah.
Again, when we were in Amsterdam in their metro trains, when you get on, basically each car has like two or four spots that are blocked off where you can just roll your bike in and set it there.
As opposed to having to hang it on a hook or fasten it somehow. Are there also fasteners? Is there a way to secure it, or it's not necessary?
No. I think they have like a little thing to help balance it, or, you know, most bikes there also have kickstands, so you can just pop it up. But
sure. The closest thing we have here in Portland is, the Type 1 and 2 Max cars? The old school high floor cars.
Oh, yeah, where you have to hike it up the stairs.
Right, you do have to carry it up a set of stairs, but there's also a place to lean the bike against the wall or against the rail where the operator's compartment is if the operator is not in there. If the operator is in there, then...
That's proper terminology for
then you can't, but it has to be described very precisely.
Okay.
You're not allowed to obstruct the operator's way in and out of his little control booth. But on the other end of the train, you can use that particular place to lean your bike against. So those can actually hold six bikes per car. There's allowed space, I believe, for six bikes on each of those old-school Max cars. The new ones, they're low floors, so it's easier access, but there's only four hooks.
And then you have to hang it up.
Which
there's not room for.
Well, often there's not enforcement for either. And really, like, it doesn't seem like there should be. But yeah, I can't count the number of trains I have been on in which there are, you know, like 10 bikes on the car.
Yeah.
And people are just finding ways to wedge them into open space.
Yeah, I mean, we do that occasionally. If it's not, like, really crowded, we'll just take them on and just kind of stand over by the side and try and keep out of the way of people getting on and off.
On
right.
Those blessed moments when you see a second Max immediately behind the first one, and you know it'll be empty.
Yeah.
Point of clarification about the episode.
Yes.
Is there a restroom break?
Oh.
Or are we going?
Well, maybe we should take a restroom break.
I'm
going
to take a restroom break.
Okay.
On the other side, we'll talk about the open letter to Amtrak.
Second door?
First door on the right.
To put forth the infrastructure at the start, and it won't get a lot of attention, but it'll be ready for when it is ready, rather than having to back build it when it is full, because, you know, they don't put cargo bikes aren't allowed on the Max.
Right. Bicycles of any unusual size or design.
Right. I mean, and a lot of us do it anyway. And
right.
If we're lucky,
it works out.
It works
okay.
out. But I wouldn't want to guarantee that I can get from place to place unless I could, you know, get on the Max. I worked with one of the guys who does, PR and customer service for Max, and he was very helpful and drew up schematics of my bike on the plans of the Max and turned it around to figure out would it fit here.
Like in a CAD program or something, just dealing with the space.
And technically, it just won't fit.
Okay.
Yeah.
But,
like, there is no place to put anything that's longer than a standard bicycle or...
Right.
Yeah.
Well, my bike is about the size of a double stroller.
Okay.
You know,
and you can bring those on.
Right.
That's always the thing I've thought about. Like, I had a friend who I think was turned away. And, I mean, it was at the Rose Quarter, which is, like, one of the central transfer hubs. A lot of traffic, a lot of people. But a fellow who, Adam Russ is his name. He used to live here in town. And he was going bike camping with his family. So it's mom and dad each have a full-size bike, and then two kids in a double trailer. And that double trailer can convert into a stroller. And if it's a stroller, it seems like it's fair game. Like, it's going to be okay to bring that onto light rail. But as a bike trailer, it's not allowed, which is interesting to me.
And, you know, my wife and I took a bike camping trip in March.
Right, and there's a good post about that on transportland.com.
Yeah, and we...
Oh, yeah.
.org.
Oh,
org.
Is it org?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, excuse me. Transportland.org.
And we biked an extra, like, 24 miles just to make it to the Gresham station to hook up with everybody else.
Oh, yeah.
Which is fine, but then we had another 24 miles from there. And so,
sure.
So it would have just been nice if we could have thrown our bikes onto the...
Yeah.
The Max. We both have cargo bikes, and I don't have another bike.
At this point, you're cargo only.
Right. I can only have so many bikes in my garage.
Yeah.
It's true. It's a similar problem to the Max car.
Yeah.
Just CAD design.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is part of the reason I have a cargo-able normal bike, because...
There we go.
my parking spot is the pole outside, so...
Right, right. And you're
I really
in a situation.
Can't have multiple... I mean, there's nowhere to put them in here that doesn't... drastically impact our living space, so, you know.
Right, in a small apartment, like, it's all... I'm not saying that this apartment is... it's a great apartment.
Yeah.
And we,
small isn't a bad word.
No, it's
not. We can simplify it into good life.
In fact,
it's
we're
true.
Actually hoping to downsize a little bit.
Okay, there we go. So that'll mean the bike stays outside.
Yes.
Yeah. I need to use the bathroom real quick, so I'll do that. Carry on.
Good times.
It definitely gives good... reason for having, like, a cycle truck or
yeah.
a bike with a big rack is that it works. And for most people, that's a good amount of cargo carrying.
Yeah. And, you know, going back to the Max thing, too, like, I think it wouldn't even be unreasonable to have them start thinking about designing that kind of thing in. But then, like, if you're going to bring on, like, a Bullet, you know, pay a dollar extra or something.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to get like a...
But you have dedicated space where you can put it, you know.
I'd go for that. I know that if I take my front wheel off and my back wheel and throw them into my backpack, my Bullet will fit.
That's a little tricky.
But if I had to go somewhere, I could do that, but it would be a pain. It wouldn't be convenient.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to get a taco cart on the Max. I'm just, you know.
Right.
Has anybody tried putting any of these... cargo bikes on Amtrak?
I was
that,
lucky
that,
enough
that's
to,
a dare
to get one.
If it fits in a box, it'll go on Amtrak.
Maybe. Yeah. It has to fit perfectly in the box.
Right. And
No. On Amtrak, they don't... The Cascade Line, they don't require a box. They have vertical hooks.
But the odd-sized ones...
Right. Oh, like Long John's too long.
Like a tandem... has to fit in a box.
Really?
Oftentimes.
Okay.
You know, and so last year I did STP on a cargo bike, and I talked to Amtrak prior to STP because I knew I had this odd-sized bike, and I wanted to make sure it fit on the trains. When I got there, all loaded up, ready for STP, I got there, and the baggage guy was like, you can't put that bike on this
oh,
car.
Shit.
And I'm like, I'm leaving in an hour. I have no other way to get to Seattle. And, you know, they're like, well, if you can fit it in that box, you can put it on. But my pallet on my Bullet doesn't detach, so it's never going to get thinner width-wise than it is.
Right.
And, I brought tandems on an Amtrak, because they'll put two boxes together to make it fit, and they're fine with that. So my bike just had the wrong... elements. It was
right.
Pallet wouldn't fit, and it wasn't under 50 pounds.
Interesting.
If it was a tandem over 50 pounds, it would have fit in the box, and that would have been good enough. Luckily, there was a really nice baggage handler, a crotchety old baggage handler who was like, on my day, we did plenty of stuff like this. No worries. I'll get your bike on the train.
I'll talk to the conductor.
He's a saint.
That's fantastic.
Seattle, and I'll let him know that it's there. And then he opened up this train car that was empty except for four Audi rims being shipped.
And that pisses you off, right? Because you know they have the space.
Right. And so he said, just put it right there. You can lift it up. That way I won't have lifted it and I won't be in trouble. Just put it in there and it'll be there when you get to Seattle.
Wow.
And then we tried.
It needs a medal.
Yeah. Well, he definitely got a thank you from me.
Yeah.
Seriously.
We tried in March to see if Amtrak was interested in having a sort of a promotional group of cargo bike riders travel up to Seattle to meet and greet with the Seattle cargo bike group. And so we'd have about 13 to 15 of us from Portland head up to Seattle, you know, and we'd promote Amtrak for having cargo bike, you know, accessibility, but they said that at this time that we're not interested in that sort of venue.
In promotions.
Yeah.
it's probably not that often that somebody with a cargo bike wants to get outside of a town. Like, the specific utility you're going to have will be primarily in your location. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if you're going to go to another town, you're not going to be carrying heavy loads of shit.
But I...
Maybe kids. But, which are not shit.
Exactly. I mean,
thank you for the clarification.
Well, hey.
If I travel...
At least not if they're well.
Well, usually they're not.
Think of, like, the Proctor family. You know, Katie and Dave.
Right.
Yeah. Two kids.
And they're really innovative about getting people around.
Right. And they both have cargo bikes. You know, they have a Yuba. And if they were to go, let's say, on a train, they would take their cargo bike to the train with their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would take the train with their cargo bike to, let's say, Seattle, hop off, and then transport kids from, you know, the train station in Seattle to wherever they're going. So it's like what you would do if you had family.
Yeah.
Part of the issue here is, like, you know, again, referencing the Netherlands, you know, like, you have to pay extra to take bikes on trains, and I don't know if cargo bikes are allowed at all, but... The thing is when you take a train from one city to the next, you get off at the next city and go rent a cargo bike.
Like, they're plentiful enough
that
you can get one anywhere.
Well, no, it is. That's the idea. So instead of taking your bok feets between cities, you just take the train and then rent one when you get there, ride it around, and then get back on the train again.
Right. Like, there's no scarcity problem.
Right.
And that's good.
That's so
because
sweet.
If there's a family that didn't own a car and they wanted to get from their house to the train station, that would be the way to do it. Otherwise, they have to take a taxi to the train station, then get to Seattle and then take a taxi.
Right, exactly.
Which doesn't seem to be a very good model for trying to get people to use a train. I would go to Seattle quite often if I could. And again, I have just the one bike, and that's the bike that I use.
Right.
Right.
And it's a sexy, sexy bullet. But
yeah.
But the cargo platform doesn't swivel.
Yeah.
I was thinking of Setma Cargo down in Eugene. We talked to Lane.
Those are sexy bikes.
Those are sexy bikes. And the reason they're so sexy is because they detach. Like, they come apart. And
really?
You can box up the cargo platform, the front half of the cargo bike, and the back half.
The back sits in the pallet of the front.
Oh.
Boxes up into a specific size.
Is that right?
Yeah,
that's something I didn't get in my interview with him. So that's fantastic.
It's made for it fits a perfect shipping size.
Uh huh.
I could be wrong on the price, but it could ship anywhere for like $400.
Sure. Yeah.
This is like the Brompton of cargo bikes.
There we go. Yeah.
It's a great design.
Right. Well, speaking of Brompton, I think Dejan is actually the one that I saw at the event yesterday. But there's a detaching. Bike. It's not a folding bike, but it's a parceling. It'll is that the right verb?
Dismemberable.
It's a dismemberable bike.
Speaking of zombies.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll keep going.
Hopefully
you got the brain.
Won't just fall off randomly though.
Right, and that's the question, I guess.
Dismemberable bike?
There was a Dejan cargo bike at the event yesterday, and somebody pointed it out to me as a bicycle that would also detach. So you've got Setma, you've got Dejan, is it Dejan? Dejan?
Sure.
It's there's that brand of folding bike. But yeah, I believe one of the perks of that one was that it also came apart. So It didn't have a hinge. That was why I couldn't find it. I took a full tour through the lot looking at all the cargo bikes, mm-hmm. trying to find the one that was a folding cargo bike, and it wasn't actually folding, but it did come apart. So, yeah, but that it seems like that maybe is that's a bonus if you're trying to take it by train.
It is.
Yeah.
It also fits inside the trunk of most cars,
which is another bonus.
Yeah. Plus, and you know, I don't know how often this is going to happen, but if you damage the front end of a bike, you would only have to replace the front end.
True enough.
Or it gives them the option to have different front ends if you have that, you know, option for like, I need a, two wheels in the front for this one gig that I have.
There were like toy sets like that where you can put different fronts on different... Yeah, right. I like that. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's you get like, the stock part and mm-hmm. different uses.
The Lego Erector set sort of bicycle so assembly.
Effect, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
With rocket launcher, whatever.
With an afterburner with a RAM scoop. Yeah.
How about a flux capacitor?
Oh, ew. Have to be all steel.
Great, Scott.
Time travel by cargo bike.
Yeah.
That would be it? Quite a breeze going that fast. With
no them. Kidding. 88 miles an hour.
4.2 gigawatts.
Wasn't there... I thought I heard that DeLorean had some sort of bicycle promotion. Like, maybe I'm mistaken.
Well, Hummer has bicycles, too.
I mean. Right. Hummer
really?
And Jeep.
Yeah.
Jeep That's had a promotion Hummer. Where they were bundling it with the Jeep, I think.
Actually, over by the, I think it's KATU over here, I've seen a John Deere bicycle parked as well.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Do you think it's an, was it customized, like low, decaled, or was it actually from John Deere?
I think it was, I don't know. I mean, I've never really studied it. It's
you can irrigate shit with it. It's great.
It's an older bike. I mean, it looks kind of like an old Schwinn or Raleigh sort of style, like lugged steel, and it's painted green and has the little logo on it. And
it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'll make a lot of old grandpas happy, I think.
Yeah.
My grandpa was the sort that kept, like, 50 trucker hats all in a row on shelf in his, like, you know, workspace. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah. He was a big John Deere fan. I was actually thinking about, there was a picture I saw one time of one of those real style lawnmowers, just, you know, mechanical, not motorized, that you would use to...
A push mower.
A push mower, yes. Yes. And that being attached to some sort of trike. And
I've seen that.
I would love to figure out how to do that. Because our lawn is it's a son of a bitch to keep short. And I think if I had a bike, it would probably be more fun and maybe easier. Who knows? But
you mow... About a fifth of an acre. Yeah.
I suppose
which is
so.
A lot.
Yeah. Urban farm.
Well, you can just convert more of it to vegetables.
Yeah,
that's
it
right.
Up. Get rid of the grass.
Food, not lawns.
We have a lot of shade we rent. So we can't cut the trees down yet.
Yeah.
Soon enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cut that cherry tree down. In the name
of love?
Or vegetables.
Yes. Yes. Maybe the same thing. What are you guys hoping for in the future of cargo biking in this city?
I'd like to see the large cargo bike shops in this town coordinate a bit more and be more congenial with each other.
It's the trouble of business, right? Is that it's kind of by nature and de facto it's competitive, I guess.
Is
the competitiveness the dominant thing for it right now, or what?
I don't know. And I know I'm probably, you know, pushing boundaries of...
You gotta be political.
Of things here, but it just... I noticed that there's a palatable tolerance, and it just is tolerance between some of the large cargo bike shops here.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like competition because they all, it seems to me, carry a fairly different range of stuff.
Mm-hmm. And they have their own niche.
Yeah. Who knows?
But if people banded together, there would be maybe more momentum for the cargo bike scene. Like, it would be easier to get one. It would be easier to have it worked on if maybe people were more cooperative.
Yeah, and just find the one that would work best for you, you know, to... For whatever you needed to use it for.
Yeah, and there's an opportunity to make Portland a cargo bike city, and to, you know, really show what cargo bikes can do, and people could look to Portland for, this is what Portland did, what can we learn from it, and then, you know, we could do that, which would be nice.
Right.
Question I've got is, looking forward, I guess it's only partial looking forward, but how much collaboration have you seen between cargo bike distributors or manufacturers and like a business fair or like the business schools at PSU or George Fox or something like that, where it's like, you know, this is a viable option for a lot of businesses to incorporate this as a founding principle. Have you seen the startup scene playing with the cargo bike scene?
I haven't. That's a great idea.
That
would be a
show up at those, set up a booth.
Yeah.
Or even just, you know, this is really forward, far thinking, but even just within a university program, there could be a class, the workshop, or whatever, in the business school that has that option. I mean, there's a lot of businesses.
Carbon neutral businesses.
Yeah.
It's not just about planting trees, but riding bikes.
Because there's a lot of business that gets done that doesn't need a big truck. And there's some benefits to a cargo bike. You can get into small spaces. It has a sign on it. You can park your bike on the sidewalk with your sign on it.
It's cheap.
It's low startup. And
compared to anything that needs a combustion engine vehicle.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have to buy like a taco truck or a bulk feeds, I mean, you know.
Right. And there's some sort of wordplay that could be done there, like a talk feats, bok,
too obscure.
Yeah. Anyways.
A Baco cart?
There's also the coffee bike scene is kind of expanding here in town, and it remains to be seen, I guess, if that's financially viable, if there's, you know, enough demand outside of the brick-and-mortar establishments, but there's a lot of people making coffee and espresso by bike.
I was going to say, in terms of, like, Portland State, just have them walk out to the farmer's market. There's the Cafe Velo, and I'm sure there are a couple of other carts in the farmer's market that use bicycles as their sort of base for...
Mm-hmm.
Scott Davison's starting up a coffee cart as an extension of the Arbor Lodge coffee shop.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
I did not know this.
Yeah, his... cargo bike he's been using for Give Pizza a Chance. He's
the orange one.
The orange one. Yeah. He owns that one, and he's gonna swap that cargo bike out for putting a thing for like cold toddies. Yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Sure. Nice.
Just show up wherever somebody wants a fucking cold toddy.
Right.
They'll have it.
I've heard of that in other cities too, where there's sort of like a, you know, they'll have like a, it's essentially a food cart, and they'll just say like, today I'm here, come get stuff, and they'll just like publish it on Twitter or in other social
media. People are waiting
stuff
for you to show up.
Yeah.
Just do it with bikes.
Yeah, totally.
Right. Yeah, at the disaster relief trials, we had the taco peddler.
Yeah.
That's right. Right, which the smells were great.
Yeah.
I stood by.
They were tasty. I had a couple.
I wish I had had some. I did not actually.
On a bike trailer or a bike.
Yeah,
it's
like it's a trike, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a Mexican Mercutio.
Mercutio.
So it's the type of trike that you would see down in Mexico.
That's really cool.
Cruising around on the beaches, selling whatever is to be sold.
So it's authentic to the cuisine.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty great.
And trike with a big
so
bonus
yummy
on the front.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I was going to say parasol. What, umbrella? A shade umbrella. Yeah.
Yeah.
Martini umbrella.
Yes. On a toothpick. The Beeline Cargo is another one that's a good example of someone carrying cargo around by bike. And we had him on sometime in the winter, and I'm blanking on his name, which is not good. But
you can censor this part of the episode.
I suppose so. We'll cut this out. We won't cut this out.
If you think of his name later, you can just, like, paste it in.
His name is...
But yeah, the idea that you can actually move stuff around the city without needing a large vehicle. And there also, just in light of current events, there was the recent death downtown because of a cargo semi making a turn and a right hooking situation. And if cargo transport by bike was a more viable option, if more people were doing it, it's not to say that it's not viable now, because it is. But if it was happening more, it seems like that would increase the level of safety quite a bit for everybody. So
yeah, and I think it came up in that discussion too, but a lot of other, I think Tokyo specifically came up in the example where they have like big freight depots along the edge of the city where like the large semis come in, drop off, and then small trucks take it actually into the city.
That's how Portland works too. No, we have Swan Island. That's where a ton of the produce goes, and then those little tiny Charlie trucks.
Yeah.
Go through town.
Right. So there are fewer tractor trailers that are running through town.
Yes.
Yeah, which is smart, but you know, then you could also, you know, in at least in some places, have it worked out where, you know, some of the more local deliveries, where it's, you know, not like all the way across town is being delivered by stuff like Beeline.
And Beeline is an actual delivery truck situation.
Right.
Where they would take over what would
They've got a warehouse with cool fridges and all that.
Right,
yeah.
And they're big.
Yeah.
Big bikes,
uh-huh.
too.
Right, they pack like 600 pounds per bike or something.
Yeah, you have to be certified.
Yeah.
Well, for our disaster relief trials, Mike Cobb was the one that was okayed to bike the bike from Beeline up to our stage. And I was like, oh, damn, I want to ride that thing.
Right, totally, yeah. But it carried, 64 gallons of yerba mate?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Which, I can't remember the brand name. I had one this afternoon.
Wyoming,
that I
think?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
I took one home with me, and then I drank it.
What infrastructure, if any, like, would be needed to make a more cargo bike-friendly infrastructure, especially for business uses of this stuff? Is there something Japan is doing better or Mexico? Centralize those distro hubs, or
you'd have to take this one because I haven't lived outside this country.
It's an ambitious question. Sorry,
I know, and I'm not a business person, so I don't know what businesses need, but I do know that cargo bikes could be part of it.
Right.
Well, you know, I think a lot of it.
Yes, he knows.
You know, the topic of infrastructure. You know, I think at this point, just for cycling in general. You know, the issue is either you have to get people to drive similarly to how people bicycle, or you have to separate the two. Because we're not getting rid of cars, and that's fine. You know, they do have some usefulness, but because they're there,
right?
It makes things tricky. So, you know, especially with people, you know, carrying diverse loads and things that are awkward and, you know, someone on a bullet with 100 pounds of stuff on it is not going to be riding 25 miles an hour up Hawthorne, you know.
Certainly not upwards, yeah.
Right.
There's a hill.
They might be going downwards, but then, you know, whether they can stop at the end is another question.
They can.
Disc brakes,
might be
right?
Into
hydraulic
something.
Disc brakes.
Yeah. But, you know, the simple fact is that even though in sort of legal code we're treated essentially the same as automobiles, bicycles just simply don't function the same way as automobiles. And so I think really for both in terms of just personal bicycling and in terms of, like, commercial stuff, really there needs to be, at least in some places, separated infrastructure for them to be really, like, you know, fully implemented, I guess you could say.
Does that mean that Minneapolis, Minnesota is going to be the capital of cargo bike transport before Portland is?
Depends if they decide to do anything or not. But, I mean, you know, it just depends, you know, because, like, for instance, take Portland. I mean, all of the, like, sort of business districts are all on the arterial streets, you know.
Right.
Belmont, Hawthorne, Powell, Division.
Sandy.
Burnside,
well,
whatever.
these are, like, two-lane arterials. They're streetcar arterials.
Right, they're smallish, but still, like, you know, that's where the vast majority of businesses who would be getting stuff delivered are,
right.
You know, and so you either have to make people go out of their way or provide a way for them to safely travel those streets, you know, and yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think there's definitely some value to providing accommodations for both personal bicyclists and commercial delivery and stuff on those types of streets in order to make that a really sort of feasible option widespread throughout the city.
But you know what? So, for those listening, I used to live across the street from here. And this place is between a Pepsi plant and Sunshine Dairy. It's the land flowing with milk and high fructose corn syrup. And there's just tons, instead of honey, there's tons of semi-trucks going past. And I've lived off Morrison and 31st, which is right by the Zupans. And so there was a lot of semi-trucks going down through a neighborhood.
Yeah.
You give people the option. Would you rather have slower traffic here and there because of bicycles? Or would you like to have these loud trucks? I couldn't sleep in past 7 because of those fuckers.
Yeah.
I would love to have to wait a little longer in traffic. Like anybody in the city would love to have quieter neighborhoods because those semis are loud.
Yeah. Well, and the interesting thing about slowing traffic, which was another really interesting thing that we saw in the Netherlands, is, you know, the supposedly the highest average speed for automobiles through Amsterdam is about 15 miles per hour.
Wow.
But they never stop. Traffic, both bicycles, pedestrians, cars, everything is just completely continuous, because when you're traveling 15 miles an hour, if someone goes out in the road in front of you, you have time to stop. You can just slow down, wait for them to move out of the way, and then you keep going.
There's no fish.
Everybody coasts.
And so, right, exactly. People drive like they bicycle.
Coast to coast.
Which is interesting, you know, like we do. You coast up to a stop sign, slow down. If there's no one there, you keep going. That's how people drive there. Because the top, you're not going 40 miles an hour through the city.
Right.
That's fascinating.
And so traffic flow is much more continuous. It's not this, like, fast stop, fast stop, fast stop.
When people accelerate to pass you as a bicyclist and to a stoplight, I mean, that's just such an interesting microcosm of our cultural priorities.
They
I have to get to the stoplight first, and you pull up and you're like, fucking here at the same time.
That happened to you and I on the way here.
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
And that's just different there, because it's okay to soft stop.
Yeah. But, you know, the issue is then you actually end up with about the same average time, you know, average speed, but a lot less frustration because you're not stopping every 30 feet, you know.
And you don't have to replace your brakes as frequently.
Yeah.
Bingo.
And so, you know, that's part of the issue, is having slower traffic is not necessarily a bad thing, even for the people who are having to slow down, you know.
Quieter, safer.
Yeah. Hmm. And you really don't lower your average speed throughout the city much.
The trick is to convince people of that.
Right.
Show that that's
which
the
is
reality.
Almost impossible.
Right.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen it in action, it's hard to imagine that that could possibly be a fulfilling transport experience. So.
It was interesting. I remember I posted something about that on PortlandEyes a while ago, and so a guy from...
By the way, that's PortlandEyes.com,
yes.
The blog of Dave Foyt.
A guy from LA commented on the post and said that in his car he has like a thing that'll record his average speed over a trip, you know, like from start to finish. And almost always it's like around 10 to 15 miles an hour through the city. You know?
Whether he speeds or glides.
Yeah, just in general, you know, when he's just driving normally, it's, you know, like, yeah.
Huh.
He might get up to 30 miles an hour at some points, but his average speed over the whole trip is...
Right.
Which is probably urban bicycling, same speed range.
On a bicycle, I get up to 30 miles an hour from time to time.
Yeah.
From time to time.
Yeah. I mean, I probably average 10 to 12-ish, depending on where I'm going. But
unless you're leaving the West Hills.
Yes. If I'm leaving the West Hills, it's much faster than that. If I'm going to the West Hills, it's much slower than that.
Yeah. Well, maybe we should lightning round it up, and then we'll wrap it up, just both for the benefit of our listeners, who I'm sure are enthralled, but are also probably, you know, have places to be and things to do. Your dream cargo bike, or do you already have it?
Well, I think you said it was lightning round.
Dream cargo bike would be a Long John with lots of modular options for the front. Lots of tie downs. I don't often need a box, but sometimes I want something that can carry things. I don't want to have rails, but sometimes I want to carry my dog. So I want to be able to just throw different things on the bike so that I can use the same bike for many different options.
Modular mods.
Like a fill in the blank.
Right. Like I'm carrying the dog today, so I throw in some side rails, or I'm carrying kids, so I throw in a box, or I'm going grocery shopping, so I'm throwing a bag on it.
In which case, the Bullet is a fairly decent option.
Which is why I own one.
Exactly.
So you're pretty much there.
I'm about to... I have to make all those things, though.
Okay.
No one has them already made for me to purchase. I have to sew them or cobble them together.
Right. And the cobbling is the tough part.
It is.
Dave, for you?
I would say, like, for my life currently as it is, I'd probably have it because it's... you know, just a very versatile bike. I really have no need for anything different than what I have for anything I currently do.
There we go. So a modified Raleigh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of laundry on that one.
Yeah. Have you seen that?
I have.
Strap the whole laundry
subscriber.
Basket to the front rack.
That's pretty righteous.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was also going to say a favorite bicycle accessory. Cargo bike or non.
Depends what you define as an accessory, I guess. Probably my panniers is really the only accessory on my bike, actually.
Yeah.
I have this really sweet walnut studio-made case that fits underneath my seat that just stores my little...
That round saddle bag? Yeah,
yeah,
that's pretty sweet.
There we go.
I just got a mud flap from them, actually. I haven't put it on yet, but...
Yeah, it's good stuff. Carries everything I need for a flat.
There
tools.
You go. Your underseat bag.
Yeah.
Nice. Brandon?
Huh?
Do you have a question for a lightning round?
Nope. No, I got the questions.
Yeah. Your beers of choice. Another hard question. These are bad lightning round questions.
Well,
and they are all votes.
I hate to say it, but only recently have I come to appreciate what a beer could taste like.
Huh?
Prior to this, I only had crappy beer, and it tasted crappy, so I thought all beer tasted crappy.
So beer that is not shit beer is your beer of choice.
Yeah, exactly.
There we go.
That's a hard choice. I don't know.
This time of year.
This time of year?
It's a good summer evening. Solstice is coming up.
Your favorite solstice beer, yeah.
Summer evening, I would say probably a nice, like, light Belgian ale. A Belgian
ale. Nice.
I don't know if I have a specific favorite. Also, actually, Le Chouf is really nice. I don't know if you've had
Le Chouf.
Le Chouf.
Yeah.
He was the star of Transformers, right?
It actually means the gnome in French. But
the
it's
gnome.
It's a Belgian with, I think it's brewed with like coriander or something, but it tastes a little bit spicy. And
coriander
it's like a
nice.
Golden, Belgian golden ale, but with like, yeah.
Nice. I'll have to look that up. Excellent.
It has a gnome on the bottle. It's pretty hard to miss.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, both of you, Travis and Dave, for making the time. This has been Brock and Brandon with the Sprocket Podcast. And you can find... Do you have your own personal blog, Travis? Or
I do,
web presence?
I do. It's BikeNounVerb.
BikeNounVerb.com?
Yes.
Excellent.
Blogspot, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a Blogspot one.
Oh, okay.
So I haven't used it in many, many months because I'm so busy with Transportland.
That's all good. And that's
it's
at...
It's a good priority.
Yes. Sure. Transportland.org.
Correct.
And not to be confused with .com. And Dave Foyt at portlandeyes.com, right?
Indeed.
As
excellent.
Well as.
As well, yeah. That's the only bike-related one.
And.
Well, that's good. All right.
And we'll edit that part out. All right. Thanks again, and this will be our sign-off point.
Thanks for listening to another episode of The Sprocket Podcast. You can find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send us feedback about the program. Send us your suggestions for anything you'd like us to talk about, anything you'd like us to drink, or anyone you'd like us to have on the show. Our email address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. You can call us and leave us a voicemail at 503-847-9774. We can put it on the program for you. Or you can text message us at that same number, 503-847-9774. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music. He's on the internet at ryanjlane.bandcamp.com. And thanks to Hurtbird for our headline sounder there at hurtbirdmusic.com. Keep listening, and we'll see you next time on the Sprocket Podcast.